Welcome to the Beyond Borders podcast. I'm your host, Shambhavi Sethi, and today we will be diving into the often overlooked but incredibly significant topic of female migration in India. Joining me for this insightful conversation are Nupur, Khushbu, Indrani, Tisha, Pradhata, and Ashani. Together, we'll unravel the complex patterns, determinants, and impacts of female migration on individuals, society, and the economy. Let's start by understanding what exactly female migration is. Nupur, can you give us an overview?
So migration is basically a pathway to prosperity for millions of people. India especially is the largest sender of international migrants globally. And it's also the top recipient of international remittances. Over the years, though, there has been an increasing trend of feminizations of migrants in the country. And women are now accounting for 49% of all migrants from India. Women specifically migrate for diverse reasons, from leaving behind poverty, conflict, and climate-related disasters to escaping deeply entrenched gender inequalities, which also might include sexual and gender-based violence, or even a lack of access to livelihoods and resources. Other women may migrate in pursuit of work or educational opportunities and the possibility of a better life for themselves and their families. They specifically operate on a network of trust, and so most women migrate hearing from other relatives or friends who turned their fortunes around by migrating for domestic work. But what doesn't get factored is the personal cost that migration entails. There are different kinds of things that drive people away from their own countries. They're forced to leave their birthplace and migrate to urban areas due to unfavorable conditions. These conditions specifically which move people away from their native are push factors, which might include poverty, unemployment, or lack of general resources. On the other hand, people are also drawn to metropolitan cities or countries from rural areas. The factors which lead them to migrate to better countries are known, supposedly better countries, are pull factors. So for a bunch of rural migrants, consistent employment opportunities with somewhat greater pay are the primary attractions. Better healthcare facilities, easier access to education, and more leisure are also major pull factors. Considering the places of origin, the destination of the migrants, and the period of the migrant stay, migration is classified into a bunch of types, which is all very self-explanatory. It's rural to urban local migration, urban to rural local migration, international migration, and legal migration, which is caused due to legal issues, short-term or long-term migration.
It's really fascinating how migration isn't just about survival, but also about hope and better prospects. Personally, my sister also migrated to a different country, mostly because to find a better life for herself, since her sexuality isn't recognized by the Indian government. So she moved to Canada, and she has been trying to have a better life. Indrani, what are the key determinants behind why women leave their homes?
So female migration can largely be understood by what we call push and pull factors, as Nupur also discussed. And a lot of the push factors are economic, sociocultural, and demographic factors, like you also mentioned with your sister. And a lot of the pull factors as well are job opportunities and education. So historically, marriage was the dominant reason for female migration, especially in rural areas in India. The most distinguishing factor of female migration, which makes it different from male migration, is marriage, but economic factors are increasingly significant. So in recent decades, more women are migrating independently for work, education, or as heads of households. But despite this shift, female migrants still face higher levels of discrimination and vulnerability compared to male migrants. From 2000 to 2020, the global share of female migrants slightly declined from 49.4% to 48.1%, according to research papers from 1986 and 2008. However, increased mobility due to improvements in transportation and communication has led to long-distance migration for both jobs and marriages. In India, though, female migration is predominantly rural to rural, followed by rural to urban and urban to urban streams. A growing trend shows more women migrating from rural to urban areas, especially for labor in industries with gender-specific demands, such as export industries. It can also be observed that 50% of female migrants are illiterate and their share declines with the increase in educational level. At the same time, as compared to males, their share is low across all educational categories, indicating a gender differential in educational level of migrants. Due to various structural changes like mechanization, deforestation, privatization of common property resources, and various developmental programs taking place in rural areas, a lot of these women, they lose their wage employment. So then they have to keep migrating, and they prefer to move out than stay back in villages and face starvation. So moreover, these women who are illiterate and unskilled are prepared to do any kind of job, unlike women with limited or higher education. At the same time, the creation of these gender-segregated labor markets provides employment opportunities to females. So here, one may say that survival seems to be the motivating factor for a lot of women to move out and migrate, and more female migration from specifically rural to rural category takes place, mainly for the education criteria as well. And a lot of factors like globalization, gender-specific labor markets, as I mentioned, and environmental changes, shifts in agricultural practices specifically for rural to rural migration are also driving increased growth of female migration. This trend reflects broader structural changes, including urbanization and improved transportation, influencing the patterns of female migration.
Even though these women are migrating for better opportunities, the challenges they face both during and after migration can be overwhelming. Khushbu, could you walk us through the kind of impact this migration has on both society and the economy?
First, let's talk about the economic impact. Female migrants are vital to several key sectors, especially domestic work and textiles, filling labor shortages and ensuring these industries function smoothly. They also send remittances, money sent back home to their families, boosting household incomes. This financial support is crucial, often going toward education and healthcare, improving the lives of those who remain behind. Yet, despite their contributions, female migrants face a persistent issue: wage gaps. Women typically earn less than their male counterparts, even when doing the same jobs. This highlights the ongoing gender inequality that continues to affect our labor force. Next is the social impact. Female migrants are often boxed into traditional gender roles, facing stereotypes that limit their autonomy. These societal expectations can prevent them from making independent decisions, which can hinder their personal growth. Moreover, discrimination and social exclusion are common experiences for these women, leaving them isolated and vulnerable to mental health issues. It's clear that building inclusive communities is critical, but sadly, many of these women find themselves concentrated in low-paying, undervalued jobs. This job segregation not only reinforces economic inequalities, but also deepens the social divide, keeping these women on the fringes of society. On an individual level, female migrants are highly vulnerable. Human rights abuses like violence and trafficking are far too common and often go unreported due to fear or a lack of support systems. These women also face severe health challenges as limited access to healthcare and education compounds their already difficult working conditions they endure. Family separation, which is a reality for many of these migrants, adds to the emotional and psychological burdens. The prolonged distance from loved ones leaves lasting emotional scars, impacting the mental health in ways that can be hard to overcome. Finally, support systems and policies for these women are often insufficient. Legal aid, social services, and effective migration management policies are lacking. While NGOs and community initiatives do provide some assistance, far more government action is needed to protect female migrants and ensure their well-being. We cannot rely solely on grassroots efforts. Sustainable policies must be in place to safeguard these women as they navigate the difficult journey of migration.
I agree, Khushbu, and socially, female migrants face significant discrimination and isolation, and they're often very stereotyped and excluded from decision-making, which limits their autonomy. This is even more pronounced for women who migrate for low-skilled jobs, and these patterns are very, very deeply intertwined with economic vulnerability.
It's really alarming to hear about the double burden of economic exploitation and social discrimination. Well, in a book written by Amy Tan, The Joy Luck Club, it basically focuses on Chinese immigrants, women immigrants. They immigrated to America to escape war and gender exploitation, because there were very rigid gender roles in the country. So the film really talks about how they have struggled assimilating in the American culture, in an individual culture, whereas they come from a community building culture, and how their first generation children born in America, how they have to deal with their own parents coming from a different country and them being from a different country and identifying with the American culture more. Tisha, what does migration look like in practice? Can you explain the patterns we see in India?
Okay, so India has seen rapid urbanization in the recent years, with about 34% of the population now living in urban areas. But what's behind this major shift? So when we look at migration patterns, two main types stand out. First, there's interstate migration, where people move from rural areas in one state to urban centers in another. Think about people leaving states like Bihar or Uttar Pradesh and migrating to major cities like Delhi or Mumbai. These migrations are often driven by the search for better job opportunities, or access to education, or even improved healthcare facilities. Then there's intrastate migration, which basically involves movement within the same state. For example, people from rural areas in Maharashtra moving to Mumbai. Here, proximity plays a major role. There's a certain familiarity and closeness that makes this kind of migration more appealing. And within these patterns, we also have temporary migration. So people move seasonally or circularly, often for specific jobs like construction or agricultural work before returning back to their rural homes. So again, why are people leaving their rural homes in the first place? The reasons are quite complex, but we can break them into three categories, which is economic, social, and environmental factors. So economic factors accounts for about 55% of the reasons. One of the biggest drivers is job scarcity. So rural areas just simply lack the industries, infrastructure, and job diversity that cities offer. So people eventually leave in search of employment and higher wages in urban areas. And then there's agriculture distress as well. Things like crop failures, mounting debt, and even farmer suicides are pushing people out of rural livelihoods. Next, we have social factors, which makes up around 26%. The pursuit of education is a big one in this. Many rural areas lack quality educational institutions, so people, especially the younger generations, migrate to cities to pursue higher education. And lastly, social mobility also comes into play. People move to cities to improve their social status and experience a lifestyle that they may not have access to in rural settings. There's the allure of a higher standard of living with better housing, healthcare, and social opportunities. And finally, also the rich diversity and culture in cities that offer exposure to vibrant cultural scenes, entertainment options, and social diversity that rural areas don't really possess.
That migration pattern also reflects the push-pull dynamics in Dani mentioned earlier. While rural areas suffer from agricultural distress and poverty, cities offer higher wages and better infrastructure. But we mustn't forget that female migrants face unique challenges even after they arrive in urban areas.
Yes, that's right. Female migrants are particularly vulnerable. Economically, they are often exploited, paid less than men for the same work, and their jobs may even have fewer benefits, similar to their urban counterparts. However, the lifestyles led by both these are highly different in their context as well. They may also be forced to work long hours without rest or additional pay. There's social discrimination in the form that female migrants may face gender stereotypes that limit their autonomy and decision-making. They may also be concentrated in certain occupations, such as domestic and care work, which are often undervalued. There's human rights, where abuses against female migrants may be, and they may be exposed to physical, psychological, and sexual violence. They may also be trafficked into sweatshops, the sex industry, or domestic servitude. There's also limited access to services, wherein these female migrants have to limited access to health and education services. They may also face delays in family reunification, which can have long-term negative effects on their health and well-being. We come to lack of legal protection, wherein female migrants may not receive adequate legal protection under the labor laws in our country, especially if they work as domestic workers. There's also lack of support in terms of the government of our country, which may lack clear policies and effective enforcement mechanisms for managing migration. They may also lack adequate support services for migrants. And this adds another layer to their personal struggles, particularly in terms of mental and emotional health. The long-term separation from family, combined with the poor working conditions, serves as a severe toll on their well-being.
Hearing all this, it's clear that while migration can offer a path to a better life, it comes with significant sacrifices. This is very well portrayed in Abhinav Sinha's Bheed, which critiques the systematic failure by our government that disproportionately only impacts, like mostly impacts, female migrants. The movie is basically about migrants trying to go back home while the COVID-19 pandemic has hit and lockdown has been enforced. Police in the film is actively trying to prevent them from crossing state borders, which was the rule given by our government, by all of the state governments, to prevent the traveling of the virus itself. Now, during this, they weren't providing them with food, shelter, or any infrastructure to help them, and barricading them inside a state that wasn't even their home. A character played by Diya Mirza, she's a very privileged woman in the film, and she's trying to get back to her daughter. When she sees these migrant workers barricaded, she believes that they're going to be fine because they have a better immunity because of their poor living standards, which is extremely ironic to say at first. So what's being done to help these women navigate these challenges is very up in the air. Ishani, could you talk about government initiatives and role of NGOs?
Well, yes, there are several initiatives in place, but implementation often falls short. Let's dive into some key government initiatives and the vital role NGOs play in supporting our women migrants. First, there are labor laws like the recent Code on Wages, which aims to secure minimum wages for all workers, including migrants. However, the enforcement of these laws can be inconsistent, leaving many women still vulnerable. Then, we have the skill development programs, such as the National Skill Development Mission. These initiatives specifically target women, helping them gain skills to earn independently. For instance, women from rural Madhya Pradesh have learned stitching, empowering them to support families. Now, turning to NGOs like SEWA or the Self-Employed Women's Association is a standout. They provide legal aid and advocate for women's rights, even successfully negotiating better wages for domestic workers in cities like Ahmedabad. Another great example is the National Domestic Workers Movement, which fosters community building, allowing women to connect, share resources, and learn about their rights. Let's consider the case of Sita, a 35-year-old woman from Jharkhand. I took this case from the article published in Hindustan Times. Well, after losing her husband, she migrated to Mumbai in search of work to support her two children. Initially, she faced exploitation as a domestic worker, earning less than the minimum wage, enduring long hours. But after connecting with SEWA, she received hospitality training and landed a better paying job in a hotel. Now Sita not only supports her family but also mentors other women migrants in her community. This story really highlights the impact these organizations can have. Women migrants also contribute significantly to our cultural landscape. Well, for instance, women from northeastern states have brought their traditional crafts and cuisines to urban market, enriching the local culture. While the journey of women migrants in India is filled with challenges, their resilience is truly inspiring.
Those organizations have truly been life-changing for many women. It shows the incredible resilience of these women and the difference that community and support can make.
As we've heard today, female migration in India is a complex, multifaceted issue. Women migrate for better opportunities, yet they face countless challenges along the way, from economic exploitation to social discrimination. With stronger government policies and continued support from NGOs, we can create a system where these women can not only survive, but thrive. Thank you to Khushbu, Nupur, Indrani, Tisha, Pradita, and Ashani for your insights today. And thank you for our listeners for tuning in. Don't forget to subscribe and follow our podcast for more insightful conversations about society, economy, and the forces shaping our world. See you next time.